Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we'll be talking to some representatives of the National Library Service about some of their services, a little bit of their history, and some of the technologies that have changed over the years.
We'll speak with Judy Dixon and Steve Prine about the evolution of audio and Braille formats through newer technology and some plans for the future. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, it's okay to accept being labeled as blind or physically handicapped, because then you're eligible to receive all sorts of wonderful services, such as those available from the NLS.
My other thought about the National Library Service, and you talk about the number of users, is we always think of the service as being for the quote-unquote blind. But there are many people, you know, like my mom, for example, she was in her 80s, one of our neighbors, they would never consider themselves blind. But they certainly have used your service, and people like that could certainly avail themselves of your service. I wonder how you encourage more people like that, who wouldn't, you know, who are just elderly, maybe have trouble reading and would never consider using the label blind.
If you know how we can do that, we're all ears. That continues to be a major challenge. And we're certainly aware, we hear all the time that people receive a box in the mail that says for the blind and physically handicapped, I'm not blind and I don't want these things arriving on my doorstep that say blind. But what'll my neighbors think? And that's a problem. People don't want to use the service because they don't want to be perceived as being blind.
Well, you know, you could just offer the option that they pay postage. Put it in a plain brown wrapper with a couple of dollars postage due and see if they like it better.
That's certainly an option.
I think there are so many people that could really very easily and happily use your service who just wouldn't even think of it. To be able to reach those people, or at least have them try it out, would be a great thing.
Probably two-thirds of the people that use the program are 60 years old or older. And we get people, because they've developed medical problems later in life, glaucoma, diabetes, even arthritis. Because if someone has severe arthritis, they can't hold a book. So they become eligible in trying to make sure that they're aware of the program and that they want to use it.
So the National Library Service and other organizations that try to help the visually impaired can do as much outreach as they want. But unless people are receptive to trying something new and working with a new technology or finding out about some new services, then that won't be successful. So it's really good to be a little bit open-minded, try some new things, and perhaps life can be made a little bit easier in some regards.
And presumably, if you're listening to us, whether it's via the podcast or a streaming internet service or over one of the radio reading services, you're already going out of your way to try to obtain information on products and services for people with print impairments and vision impairments. But if you have some friends or neighbors or relatives who you think could benefit from these services, well, share the information with them and tell them how wonderful some of these services are, such as all the wonderful reading material that you can get from the NLS.
And if you don't catch that information in the show here, the links, the contact information we'll give you, and phone numbers will certainly be in our show notes on our website.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Judy Dixon and Steve Prine. Can you start by introducing yourselves?
Okay, I'm Judy Dixon. I'm Consumer Relations Officer and Acting Braille Development Officer here at the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We're part of the Library of Congress.
I'm Steve Prine. I'm the Assistant Chief of the Network Division here at NLS.
Does either of you have a visual impairment yourself?
Yes, I'm totally blind.
And I'm legally blind.
And what were the causes of those?
Oh, who knows? I don't know. I mean, I'm totally, virtually totally blind from birth, and it was some funky thing.
And from birth also for me. We've both been this way our entire lives.
And expect to stay that way.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the services of the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, which is part of the United States Library of Congress. A lot of people refer to it as NLS because that's a lot shorter. We'll be talking about their services starting with their inception, and we'll cover some newer technology and plans for the future in the high-tech segment of the show. But let's start with a little bit of history of the NLS. So Pete's been a patron of the National Library Service for many decades. I'm fully sighted, so I just watch the boxes come and go, although these days he's downloading everything. Can you give a little bit of the history of the National Library Service?
This program is a result of really lobbying by the blind community and organizations that were active in the community, the American Foundation for the Blind, the American Printing House for the Blind, and Braille Institute of America in the late 20s and early 30s to develop a program nationally. A number of public libraries around the country had books in embossed format for blind residents of their cities, but there were at least five different types. The Braille system was one, but there was New York Point, there was Moon Type, there was Boston Legal, and American Braille. So if you lived in New York and borrowed embossed books, if you moved to Detroit, even though they had books in embossed format, it might be a different system and you couldn't read it. And the cost of actually producing the books was very expensive. So there was a certain economy of scale if the books were selected and produced centrally and then shared with a network of libraries that provided the service. Ruth Pratt was in the House of Representatives from New York, and Reed Smoot was a senator from Utah, and they introduced bills that passed the House and Senate. The bill was signed into law by President Herbert Hoover on March 3rd, 1931, and so that was the implementation of this program. And basically, the law mandated the Library of Congress to provide books in embossed format for the adult blind of the United States. So from the beginning, 19 libraries across the country expressed interest in participating in the program. So basically, the Library of Congress acquired the title, produced the book in embossed format, provided them to this network of libraries, which actually provided them directly to readers. And in 1934, the law was amended to include sound reproducers. The Library of Congress produced the first books on record in 33 and a third RPM format. In 1935. So we're now down to just one state, Wyoming, that doesn't have a regional library, but its readers are served by the regional library in Utah.
How long did you keep producing records?
The records were introduced, as I said, in 1935. When we introduced the cassette format, expected the records to be phased out by like 1978, but it really wasn't until 1987 that the hard disk records were finally discontinued. We produced books on flexible disc record up through 1994, and it wasn't really until 2000 that we stopped distributing magazines on flexible disc. In 1972-73, NLS really began to move from the record format to cassette format.
How long did you continue to use the cassette tape format?
As you know, we've gotten almost 40 years out of cassette usage, and when we started in 2009, distributing players and books in digital format, that format has certainly continued to grow. Even as late as 2011, the circulation for the network was probably 50.1% cassette, 49.9% digital. I think when we look at the statistics for 12, it's going to be 60 or 70% digital.
Do you have a cutoff date for when, beyond which you won't be shipping cassettes anymore?
We do, but it's not really a hard and fast date. We haven't actually produced a cassette player since 2007. We haven't produced a book on cassette since 2010. And at this point, there's probably 35,000 titles that are on cassette that have not been converted to digital format. And our goal over the next few years is to convert all of those titles. There are two caveats to that. One is that the book is obsolete. It isn't something that should be converted like a 1987 tax guide.
I guess one wouldn't need that anymore.
You wouldn't think that. And or the quality of the recording, the original recording, just doesn't lend itself to conversion. But aside from that, we expect to try to convert all those titles. So we won't produce physical copies, but they will go up on Bard.
Now, for both the records and the cassette tapes, you used very non-standard playback speeds. How did you select those?
From 1935 through the mid-60s, on record, we're at 33 and a third. And then in the mid-60s, NLS experimented and reduced the speed from 33 and a third to 16 and two-thirds, and then again to 8 and a third. And it was done for several reasons. One is that the more recording time you could get on a record, the fewer records there had to be, but also recorded at a special speed, and NLS controlled the access to the player. We have never paid any royalties for copyright for materials that we have recorded or braille for our collections. But part of the agreement was that NLS would make sure that these books were only used by people eligible for the program. So by recording them at a special speed and providing the playback equipment, if someone found one of our records or even one of the cassettes on the street or bought it in a thrift shop or something, they really couldn't play it. That also fed into the fact that the post office has a free matter mailing privilege. So all the materials that a library sends to readers and readers send back to the library go as free matter. And one of the requirements for that is that it be in a special format for blind and handicapped.
That was one of the earliest forms of copy protection.
Yes, exactly.
And similar to the records, where they produced the records in non-standard formats, you also produced cassettes in non-standard formats where there were four tracks on every cassette. So there were like four different reading sides, and that was also at a slower speed. And there was special equipment for that. So that was very interesting. I remember each of those and lived through each of those formats.
Can you talk a little bit about the conversion process? Do you go back to the original master recordings and then digitize that, or how does that work?
For some of the older books, we don't even have the master recordings. So it's a matter of getting the best recording that we can. The problem with the older book isn't so much the quality of the recording. It's actually, or not in the sense of the physical tape. It's a matter of how the book was recorded, because sometimes they were recorded in studios that sounded like great big caves, and so there's a lot of echo. I mean, people must have been much more tolerant of incredibly bad recordings back in the 70s, because to hear them now, you think, oh my God, that was so horrible. How could anybody ever listen to that?
For people who are not familiar with your services, can you talk a little bit about what the current services that you offer people are and how they can find out about it?
We have regional libraries. And if people can go to the closest to them, if they don't know where that is, they can go to the NLS website, which is www.loc.gov/NLS. And on that website, there's a link called Find a Library. Each library has a slightly different application process, but essentially you fill out an application and give them whatever. And in the case of blind people, it's a matter of having what NLS calls a competent authority certify your blindness. And that can be a librarian, a teacher, a psychologist. People don't have to go and have a medical doctor certified.
And it's not just for visual disabilities. It's also for people with physical disabilities and learning disabilities and dyslexia and stuff.
It's for people with physical disabilities and visual disabilities. The people with learning disabilities are not covered as such. People whose reading disability is physically based. We get a lot of flack about this, but this is how it is. And people whose reading disability, they have to have a doctor certify that their reading disability is physically based. And then they are certified as reading disability, but the idea is that they're part of the physically handicapped population.
And so once they've joined, what is available to them?
Books on digital cartridge. There's a cartridge player available free on loan. Beginning in January 2013, the audio magazines will be provided on digital cartridge. So that's a change to the program from the past. And these are the audio services. We also have a download service. People can download their digital books and audio magazines. We also provide Braille services. We have hard copy Braille books, hard copy Braille magazines, and we have downloadable Braille books and magazines that people can read on refreshable Braille devices.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about the Bard website. I've been using that to download all my audiobooks, but it appears that you just went under a transition with the website, and I know that electronic Braille was intended to be downloaded there, and I'm not sure if that's available yet.
It is available. BARD stands for Braille and Audio Reading and Download. And not to date this broadcast, but it just happened that Braille is now available on BARD. People can download Braille books and Braille magazines. To accommodate older technologies, the Braille books available through BARD are going to be served as zip files. Well, some of the older Braille note-taking devices that people have been using with our former Web Braille service are not able to handle zip files. So we're still providing Braille as individual volumes, as BRF files, which Braille readers know as formatted Braille files. We're still providing those directly from our catalog and directly from our Braille book review site. So people who have used the service for a while and are used to using it in a particular way can still continue to do that.
Well, I must say, as a user of the BARD site, I find it very easy to use. I mean, you guys have really done a super job with the site in terms of making it accessible and very easy to find material, either current magazines or search by author or title. It really is a pleasure to use.
We are very pleased about how it works and how the reception that it's gotten from readers. And we know it's the way of the future. However, quantitatively, only about 15% of our readers are currently using BARD, which means the rest of the readers are still getting their books through the mail from our library.
Wow. So really, the vast majority of your users are getting physical materials.
That's correct. And that was really what I wanted to stress, is that we produce the physical copies of the books and the playback equipment. We provide it to our network of libraries, and that is not going to go away anytime soon. We were talking a moment ago about cassettes and when we're phasing that out. I was saying we hadn't produced any new machines in a few years or cassette books, but the libraries still have collections, and although the circulation is going down, we will continue to have our libraries provide books on cassette as long as we can maintain cassette players. We did a lifetime buy of parts when we stopped producing cassette machines, and it's just not clear how long that will continue. So we're going to try to extend that service as long as there are people that want to use it.
Well, it's an interesting balancing act that you do. I mean, you do a very good job of following the new technologies to try to reduce costs and improve the distribution. On the other hand, there are many people, particularly older people, that just aren't able to use these newer digital and electronic distribution means, and they feel a lot more comfortable with something they can hold in their hand.
Well, and we were really impressed when we saw the new player for the digital cartridges. That was clearly designed with the user in mind.
We spent many years testing the player and tested it from the beginning, testing buttons and button shapes and how hard people had to press a button, and tested player functions, how big the player could be, and just tremendous amount of tests. And then we actually put a player in people's hands and had them use it for a month in their own homes to see how that worked. And then we did separate speaker tests just to see which kind of speakers sounded best to people. So a lot of effort and testing went into that player.
You guys do a very thorough job of that testing and did come up with a very usable device. I use a book port to read all of my NLS material, but I can't imagine some of the elderly people in particular that we know who use your services. They couldn't possibly use a book port with all its functions and buttons, but your players are very usable for them.
And next week, we're actually going to be demonstrating the new digital audio player, as well as how to download books from the BARD site.
You know, it's also interesting to note that a lot of your employees are visually impaired or blind themselves. They're actually users of the service. I guess that helps you in making the services more relevant to those with these kinds of vision issues or dexterity issues.
Well, and we've seen that in a number of technology development teams. If there are users on the team, it really helps to improve the quality of the product being developed because they know what's going wrong and what needs to get fixed.
So if people haven't availed themselves of the services available at the National Library Services, you might just find out more about it and try it out. They're very accommodating to people with all ranges of capabilities and requirements, and they have many different options to suit your needs.
So the one other thing that comes to mind is, I know you guys always struggle with funding. How do you view that? I mean, is that a big issue for you?
We are in the legislative branch as part of the Library of Congress. So over the life of this program, it has always been well supported. That's not to say that we haven't taken cuts when other government agencies have taken cuts, but we've really never been singled out for any kind of special reduction of funding. And in fact, to make this transition from analog to the digital environment, we really had our director at that time had to go to Congress and ask for really an additional $75 million to make the transition. And there was discussion, but they provided the funding.
Actually, the only time I could think that you were ever singled out that I know of was all that stuff about the Playboy being published in Braille.
Yes. And we still produce it in Braille under a court order.
And the joke was it was only the blind people that weren't looking at the pictures. They were just reading for the content.
For the article, yeah. Still true.
Now for this week's high-tech item, current and future initiatives at the NLS. What new services are you working on now?
The other thing we're doing right now is developing smartphone apps. We're developing both an iOS player and an Android player. And our player is going to be able to play our books and magazines from Bard as well as be a Braille reader. So it's going to be with supported Braille displays that are supported by iPhones and what little Braille support there is in Android yet, but we'll work with it as it evolves.
And when might such applications be available?
The contract is scheduled to end in the spring. We don't have working book prototypes. We have mock-ups so far that we're looking at, but we're actively working on these two apps.
So one of the big issues you guys struggle with all the time is the copyright protection of these things. I know like on the book port, you need a special key to read NLS files, and I'm sure you run into these same issues with iPhones and Android applications. How do you negotiate all those issues?
We don't have to negotiate anything with the actual publishers because as long as we do what we're pledged to do, which is provide materials in specialized format and protect the access to them, then we can do that. So we have to make sure that whatever we do isn't available to the general public. People can't just use it.
And how's that going to work with a smartphone?
The way it's going to work with a smartphone, the only way you're going to be able to get books on it is through your wish list on the Bard site. So you go to Bard, you put a book on your wish list, then when you run your smartphone app, you can access your wish list and download books. If somebody runs our app, it's going to ask them to log in with their Bard username and password, and they won't be able to get one unless they're eligible.
So that sounds similar to the Learning Ally application for downloading books.
It is similar. As a matter of fact, our app is being developed by Shinano Kinchi, who developed the Bookshare app. So it's very similar.
So now Bookshare does a very different thing. They've actually integrated the search and download feature into their iPhone app. How do they manage to do that with seemingly less restrictions?
You still have to log in with a username and password. The first version of their app also didn't have that feature. And we may put that in 2.0 or 3.0 of ours as well. It's just more complicated to do it that way.
I really like that about my Bookshare application, that you're able to do a browse and search right on my iPhone, and you know, it doesn't involve my computer at all. It makes it very seamless and handy. So that would be a nice feature to see.
And of course, the thing that keeps me from reading his books, because I'm not eligible, is that there's no way he's relinquishing his smartphone. Certainly not long enough for me to listen to an entire book.
We've had comments on our show and listeners asking about smartphone applications.
Coming soon to an Apple store near you.
There you go.
Well, and I can't wait for that one. I really enjoy using the Read2Go app for reading Bookshare books on my iPhone. And as good as VoiceOver is, it's not quite as good as the audio that comes from the National Library Service. So I'll surely download that app as soon as it's available. And maybe we'll review it on this show.
So are there any more initiatives that you guys are involved in these days that you'd like to talk about?
We're going to be doing a large national survey of our users and try to get at some of the non-users, people who don't use the service, to find out why, to get a better handle on, you know, what appeals to people, what doesn't appeal to people, what people would like to see in the service in the future.
Do you know approximately how many users you have?
Around 500,000 across the United States. One of our goals over the next couple of years is to try to increase the quantity of our readership. Today, it's just NLS-produced books that are on BARD, but many of our network libraries have local recording programs, and they produce titles of books and magazines of their own. So we're working on a process by which they can submit those, and those can be put up on BARD as well.
So that raises a related question. There are lots of commercial ventures that make commercial audiobooks, and that's what I listen to. If the NLS records a book and one of these commercial ventures records a book, can you ever share the same recording?
We do have some commercial audiobooks in our program with agreements with those producers as far as just getting the files and so forth.
Yeah, I've noticed that's a big change the past few years, is you do have more books that you seem to get from the outside and just massage into your format.
Yes.
Which probably makes you more efficient at, you know, getting more books for less cost and more diversity, I would guess, right?
It is and it isn't. There's a lot of work that has to be done to make that happen, and it's not as efficient as it would appear.
So you're still using your own readers in addition?
Oh, yeah.
What's your phone number if people want more information?
800-424-8567.
And is there a non-800 number that's available to people overseas?
202-707-5100.
And Judy gave their web address earlier. Just to reiterate, it's www.loc.gov/NLS for National Library Service.
And as usual, all of that information will appear in our show notes,
which you can find at our website, which is www.eyesonsuccess.net. And we would like to say a big thank you to Judy Dixon and Steve Prine from the NLS. That's it for show 1306. Next week on Eyes on Success, as promised, we'll be demonstrating their digital audio reading device and how to download audio material from BARD. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.